It's half past eight, New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike sets up a board of four know-it-alls for you to throw questions at. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10 plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first, and all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I present our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman, Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, let me remind you again that Information Please is a completely unrehearsed and ad-lib performance from beginning to end. Now, tonight we have with us the priceless pair, John Kieran, sports expert, naturalist, and classical authority, and Franklin P. Adams, light verse writer and conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post. Our guests are, first, the one and only Alexander Wolcott, actor, raconteur, author, and S.J. Perlman, whose funny pieces you may have read in the New Yorker, and in his latest book, Look Who's Talking. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. But before we start with the program proper, I should like to clear up something, Mr. Perlman and Mr. Wolcott. In the newspapers this evening, there is an advertisement about you two gentlemen. It states, Mr. Wolcott will appear on Information Please this evening and lists Mr. Wolcott as America's number one wit. That advertisement is flanked by another one listing Mr. Perlman as also America's number one wit. Now, I would like to clear up the thing has got to be settled one way or the other before this evening is over.
Typographical error.
In which case?
Well, I'm speaking for myself.
That's extremely modest, Mr. Wolcott. Mr. Perlman.
Well, I'm perfectly willing to wrestle Mr. Wolcott for the championship if we can do it right here.
Well, I don't know. Wolcott's got some very funny holds, Mr. Perlman. I wouldn't take a chance on it if I were you. Besides, he outweighs you.
You've got American Wit number 6 right here in your Board of Experts.
Who is that?
Well, you old flatterer.
Well, before the evening is over, we may know whether any of us is America's number one wit, and we'll start in with a question which is about humor and wit. This comes from Mary J. Bryan of Los Angeles, California. And I'm going to read some characteristic excerpts from the works of well-known humorous writers, and you are to identify the authors from the style of each. Is that clear? We have to get 2 out of 3, but I'll start with an off-the-record quotation, if I may. There was a silken insolence in his smile as he drew the greatcoat about his face and leveled his shooting iron at her dainty puss. Leave go that lady or I'll smear you. Who wrote it? Mr. Kieran.
Ring Lardner.
That's what you think.
Yes.
Mr. Perlman.
It would be extremely immodest of me to acknowledge that.
Mr. Perlman is the immortal author of those probably highly mortal lines. And how do those things come to you, Mr. Perlman?
Oh, in the night, or through a glass darkly.
All right. Now, you did very well on that, Mr. Perlman. I'll see what you can do now that we play for real. Here we are. Quote. They stood looking at one another. So you didn't know, she murmured. In a flash, DeVere realized that she hadn't known that he didn't know, and knew now that he knew. Miss Perlman.
Stephen Laycock?
Attaboy. That's very good. How did you know it?
I remember DeVere out of the foot.
Just there. DeVere. That's very good. Stephen Leacock in a little piece called Spoof. I think that's very good going, Mr. Perlman. You apparently read your competitors.
All the time.
Let's hope they do as much for you. Now, here's the second. Quote, once there was a lovely two-stepper who went to a swell hop and there met a Corina who had come to visit a school friend. Oh, we have 3 hands. I'll try Mr. Wolcott on that.
George Ade.
George Ade is quite right, Mr. Wolcott. And Mr. Adams and Mr. Perlman also had their hands up and they're going to say George Ade, too. That gives us 2 out of 2. What can you do with this one? Quote, they even got a barber and a valet, but you can't get a shave while he's pressing your clothes, so it's pretty near impossible for a man to look their best at the same time. Mr. Adams.
Ring Lardner.
Ring Lardner, yes, and you couldn't possibly mistake it. You know what story it's from?
Haircut.
No, you're Mr.
The Big Town.
The Big Town, Mr. Yeah. Wolcott. That's very good going. Thank you, Mr. Adams and Mr. Wolcott. That gives us 3 out of 3. These humorists know their stuff. Now, the next one. from George Steiner of New York City is perhaps a little harder. It's about Watsons. What is a Watson, Mr. Wilcott?
Well, a stooge for a Holmes.
All right. The original Watson was. Name the famous man to whom each of these Watsons was or is an assistant. Get two out of three. Now, the first is Edwin M. Watson. These are in all cases, real Watsons. Edwin M. Watson is in real life.
Oh.
He is a Watson to what more famous man? Well, the answer is Mr. Franklin D. Roosevelt. Mr. Watson, Edwin M. Watson, is his military aide and secretary. That gives us one wrong. That's a tough one. Now, the next Watson is Thomas A. Watson. He was assistant to what more famous man? Thomas A. Watson. And Mr. Perlman.
Question?
Go ahead.
Is that the Thomas A. Watson of International Business Machines?
No, it is not. That exhaust your Watsons, Mr. Perlman?
I'm afraid it does.
If I give you a quotation, I'll bet you'll give me the answer. Quote, Mr. Watson, come here. I want you. Who said that? Mr. Perlman.
Samuel F. B. Morse?
Bell. Yes, Alexander Graham Bell. That gives us one wrong. Watson was his assistant. And finally, John H. Watson. Well, this is the only Watson I would have expected all of you to know.
Sherlock Holmes.
That's right, Mr. Adams. Sherlock Holmes. That gives us two wrong out of three, and courtesy of Lucky Strike, we send $25 to Mr. Steiner for the set of the Britannica. Now, the next one comes from Eve Frank of this city. We have to get two out of three. Now, gentlemen, you're going to hear three sets of dialogue excerpts from trial scenes. And I want you to identify for me the play or the novel from which each of these trial scenes is taken. Is that clear? Now, in all cases, the male adult roles are played by Mr. Donald MacDonald, who possesses any number of voices. Let's have the first one.
How near were you?
Near as I am to you.
Were you hidden or not?
I was hid.
Where?
Behind the elms that's on the edge of the grave.
Anyone with you?
Yes, sir. I went there with...
Wait a minute. Never mind mentioning your companion's name. We'll produce him at the proper time. Did you carry anything there with you?
Only a dead cat.
I must say that Mr. Wilcott had his hand up when this is one-third over, and all the others had their hands up at the end. Mr. Wilcott, will you take it away?
It's the trial of Injun Joe.
Yeah, yes, from what book?
Tom Sawyer.
That's right. That's right. That's very good going. Thank you very much. Does anyone deny that, Mr. Perlman? No skepticism on your face? Okay. We'll have the second dialogue excerpt, shall we?
Will you look at this knife in my hand? Have you ever seen it before? Not until I saw it here in the courtroom. Are you sure? Here, catch it. Ah, you've caught it with your left hand. I offer in evidence the left-handed lover of Gertrude Rice and the knife with which he committed the murder. That's our case. Your Honor, we submit our case on the evidence and ask for a verdict.
Mr. Wilcott's hand was up when that was about half done. Mr. Wilcott?
Trial of Mary Dugan.
That's very good, Mr. Wilcott. Trial of Mary Dugan. How far back does that go?
Oh, the early 20s.
Well, I think that your memory goes back very well, too. The Trial of Mary Dugan. That gives us two out of two.
Well, I'm not senile.
No, I realize that perfectly well. You're in the first flush of you. The third and last dialogue excerpt.
Did she go away then?
Yes.
And have you seen your mother since that night?
No. No, I want to see her.
Do you know where she is?
No. No, please tell me. Daddy, dear, why did you make Mama cry and run away from me?
For God's sake, you're torturing my little baby. You're torturing my little girl.
Thank you. And thank you, Jeannie, who did the part of the little girl. Jeannie is only 9, by the way. How about that, gentlemen? The answer is, it's from an old melodrama, a very successful one, by Elmer Rice, I think, called On Trial. Remember it now?
Oh, yeah.
Remember it, Mr. Wilcott?
Produced in August 1914.
Well, you apparently know everything about it. That's right. That gives us two out of three, which is all we were required to get, and sends us on to the next question from Clark Fuller of Syracuse, New York. This is about some famous teams. Who did what in these famous teams? Who was the artist, Currier or Ives? Who was the artist, Currier or Ives? We all know about the Currier and Ives prints. Mr. Adams.
Ives.
Ives was the artist. What did Currier do?
Currier went around selling them.
Well, I think he printed them. He may have sold them, too. That's correct. Who asked the questions, Moran or Mac? That's Ben's votable team. Mr. Wilcox?
I think Moran.
Moran is right. Yeah. Moran is absolutely right. Who was the hard-boiled partner, Spenlow or Jawkins? Maybe we ought to get clear as to who Spenlow and
it
Jawkins
were. It was a law firm in David Copperfield.
Very good, Mr. Wilcox. And which was the hard-boiled partner?
Well, I should think...
Mr. Kieran?
I think Jawkins was supposed to be the hard-boiled...
That's right.
Spenlow fake, yes.
Yes,
excused himself always by...
That's right. Spenlow was the tender-hearted one. Whenever he had to make a hard decision, he blamed it on Jawkins. Well, apparently these questions are too easy for you, gentlemen. See what you can do with this one. From Jerry Diamond of this city. This is about mystery stories. Get 2 out of 3. In what mystery stories... did the murderers use these tricks to deceive the police? Now, in the first case, the murderess shoots herself in the back. Just how this is done, I have no information. In what book does that occur? Well, it's one of the stories of S.S. Van Dyne called The Green Murder Case, or Green Murder Mystery. Do you recollect it now, Mr. Wilcox? I don't, but apparently in that book, a murderess shoots herself in the back. And that gives you one wrong. And how about this one? The murderer plays a dictaphone record of the victim's voice after leaving the house. Mr. Wilcox.
That's also by S.S. Van Dyne.
No, unless I'm missing
one. Yes, one. It's the one at the Canary murder case.
Well, if so, we'll have to adjudicate this later. It's quite possible. But my information tells me that it's in the murder of Roger Ackroyd. By Agatha Christie.
Yes, it is there.
Does he do the
but
same
it's
thing?
Also, it's also in the one that was based upon that...
Go ahead.
That, well, that chorus girl that was done in 57th Street.
That's right. I'm argued down by him, Mr. Wilcox.
Yes,
but I believe, you're
the
correct.
The alibi was proved by the record.
Okay. You can't argue with Wilcox on murder. I've found that out. In the last case, the murderer hides the body in a telephone booth overnight. Mr. Wilcox.
Trouble, the late difficulties at the Bellarama Club.
Bellona. Mr. Perlman, you cleared up that title. Mr. Wilcox had it correct.
Simply Bellona, that was...
Yes, the unpleasantness at the Bellona Club. And who's the author of the book?
Dorothy Sayers.
Dorothy Sayers, yes. That's very good. Thank you, gentlemen.
How you published in a pocket edition.
Yes, for 25 cents. The next question comes from R.W. Cotton of Pittsburgh. This will test your knowledge of poetry, and it's all about night. Get 2 out of 3 references. Where do you find these references? The first is The Cheek of Night. The Cheek of Night. Mr. Kieran.
That's from Romeo and Juliet.
100% correct. Who says it?
Romeo says it. She hangs upon the cheek of night like a rich jewel in an Ethiopian.
Thank you. We can't fill the actor in you, can we, Mr. Wilcox? That's correct, Mr. Kim, Mr. Wilcox. Now, the second reference to night is this, quote, the azure robe of night. Mr. Adams. So far, you're
okay. Or the azure robe of night.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
When freedom from her mountain height.
Oh, now you're going great guns.
Unfurled that banner to the air.
Yeah, her standard. Her standard.
Standard to the air. She tore the... azure robe of night and da 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 da.
Set the stars of beauty there.
And set the stars of glory there, as Mr. Kieran reminds us. What poem is it from, gentlemen? Mr. Kieran.
It's Joseph Rodman Drake.
Joseph Rodman Drake, The American Flag. Now, the third reference to night is simply The Shades of Night. The Shades of Night. Mr. Kieran.
Well, falling fast, you by D, you by da.
That sounds like Adams, that you by D, you by da. And the poem, of course,
Henry Wadsworth's Longfellow, Excelsior.
Very good. That gives us 3 out of 3. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, for anyone who says that tobacco, after all, is just tobacco, Mr. Cross has an interesting rebuttal.
I have here an official tobacco market report covering sales in the North Carolina Middle Belt one day last fall. The report lists 71 different grades of tobacco. Now, these grades vary greatly in quality and in price. Obviously, the finer, lighter, milder tobaccos cost more, but Lucky Strike wants and pays for and gets that finer, milder leaf. For example, at auctions in Oxford, North Carolina, during the 1940 season, the American Tobacco Company paid 30% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 30% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Next time you buy cigarettes, remember, Lucky Strike consistently pays higher prices to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. So ask for Lucky Strike.
Mr. Cross, you and your official report dispose of that subject in just 57 seconds. Now, how about this one? This comes from Margaret Miller of Sacramento, California. Again, get 2 out of 3. In what famous works did the following conveyances play an important part? In the first case, it's the Dover Mail Coach. Mr. Kieran.
The Tale of Two Cities.
The Tale of Two Cities. How does it play a part in that book?
Well, it's the opening scene. Mr. Jarvis Lowry is on his way to Paris and gets worried by Jerry Cruncher, Sr. The message is recalled to life and so forth.
Yes,
you want the whole scenario.
You assume that I know what you mean when you say and so forth, Mr. Kieran. I'm sure you do. That's right. The Dover Mail Coach is in the Tale of Two Cities by Dickens. And how about this next conveyance, which is a Hudson truck? A Hudson truck. Not the river, but Hudson, the well-known maker of cars. Hudson truck. Well, it's in a novel that I think you have all read during the last 2 years or so. John Steinbeck's The Grapes of Wrath. It's the truck in which the Joad family traveled to California. Do you remember it now? Remember it from the movie, Mr. Adams.
No, I didn't remember it was a Hudson.
It's a Hudson truck. That's one wrong. Have to get the next one right. The Transatlantic Clipper. In what famous work would you find that? Mr. Perlman.
Well, it was used quite recently in Foreign Correspondence.
Yes, that's right. That would be a perfectly good answer. And I think it was used also...
Flight to the West.
Flight to the West by Elmer Rice. Mr. Adams, that's quite right. That gives us 2 out of 3. How about this one from J. Mervyn Loxton of Manchester, New Hampshire? Now, the studio pianist, gentlemen, is going to play 3 choruses from Gilbert and Sullivan. And you are supposed to show that you recognize these choruses by singing them with the words. Is that assignment perfectly clear to you?
And is it very unpleasant?
Not agreeable to you, Mr. Wilcott, eh? Shall we start the first one? How much more of this do you want, gentlemen? How about
if you want to know who we are?
Well, now, can you sing it for us, Mr. Adams? Or whatever
we are
it is.
Gentlemen of Japan.
All right, go right ahead.
On many a base from there.
Go ahead. We have to get the words, gentlemen.
Our attitude's queer and quaint.
Is this a quotation or an expression?
No, that's the way it goes.
I'm wrong. You're wrong. I'm afraid to sing it. We are.
If you want to know who we are, now go ahead from that. We are gentlemen of Japan. How does it go on?
On many a vase and jar.
Yes.
On many a something and fan.
Yes. Screen.
Screen and fan.
Yeah.
We figure in
lively
paint.
Our attitude's queer and quaint.
We figure in lively paint.
You're wrong if you think it ain't. That's good enough. Now let's have the second chorus. Adams?
That's from Isle Lansing. I won't sing it because it takes several voices.
Well, you have several.
Bow low, ye lower middle classes.
Yes. Mr. Wilcott, were you going wrong with that?
Bang something in your brasses. It's the entrance of the pier.
Yes. Bow, bow, ye tradesmen, bow, ye masses, blow the trumpets, bang the brasses, and so forth. Now, the last one is perhaps the hardest of them. Adams?
When the foeman bears his seal, tarantara.
Yes? Can you go ahead with it?
We comfortable feel, tarantara.
That's pretty. And how's the third line go, Mr. Adams? Put on that other voice for us.
When the foeman bears his seal, tarantara.
And we find the wisest thing.
Comfortable feel, tarantara. And we find the wisest thing, tarantara. Is to slap our chest and sing, tarantara.
There you go. All right, gentlemen. Now, the following is a very, very difficult problem. It was thought of by Agnes W. Clark of Pittsburgh. Define each of the following with words only. In other words, do not do the following. A hiccup, a sneeze, and a snore. I want you to tell me what each of them means in words only. A hiccup, a sneeze, and a snore. Now, gentlemen, you've all heard hiccup, sneeze, and snore. Well-known law firm. Mr. Kieran.
hiccup is a reiterated impediment of the breathing apparatus.
A reiterated audible interruption
and impediment in the vocal cords.
In the vocal cord. Just what happens exactly when you hiccup, Mr. Caring?
I'd have to diagram that.
Well, it's accompanied with closure of the glottis. You know the glottis? And inrush of air against the closed glottis produces the peculiar sound known as a hiccup. I think your definition is good enough for me, Mr. Caring. But what can you do with sneeze, Mr. Wilcott?
Well, it's a nervous effort to expel, causing a spasm of the respiratory passage.
And involuntary.
Involuntary.
Very good, yes. And what is it usually caused by, Mr. Wilcott? Why do you sneeze? Why does any man sneeze, Mr. Wilcott?
Some particle of dust, some...
Yes, where would it lie?
Or the neurotic symptom produced by a state of mind.
Yes, you might be a merely nervous sneeze.
Or occasionally snuff.
Mr. Perlman, do you have any...
I was just about to say fun in the Eustachian tube.
That just will pick up and sneeze and leads us on to snore. Snore?
A snore is an interruption of the air through the passage. It's caused by the relaxation of the membranes during sleep.
Wow.
Isn't that good?
Made it.
I'm lost.
Certainly good. I'm your old roommate, too.
I think a soft palate is what waggles about in the snoring, and it's vibration that causes that ronronation,
I believe. Yeah. I think, Mr. Wilcott, Mr. Kearns got it on you on accuracy. He got the soft palate in.
Mine was more charming.
Yes, charm isn't everything, Mr. Wilcott. It's due, as Mr. Kearns tells us, to vibration of the soft palate and the uvula, Mr. Kearns. Remember the uvula? I think I'll accept that answer. That gives at least 2 out of 3 on hiccup, sneeze, and snore. The well-known dramatic star, Margallo Gilmore of the city, has sent in this question to us. Name 3 fictitious characters who achieved fame as a result of doing a job of cleaning or polishing or similar activities. Mr. Perlman.
Hercules cleaned the Augean stable.
Very good, yes. One of how many tasks that he was required to do?
7 or 14.
Well, no, just 12. In between, 12. Mr. Kieran?
Sir Joseph Porter, KCB. Polished up the handle of the big front door.
That's a good one, Mr. Kieran, yes. From Gilbert and Sullivan. That gives us 2. Now we have to have 1 more. Who did some famous polishing? Mr. Perlman.
Would you accept the opening of Tom Sawyer?
What happens there?
Whitewashing the boards?
No, I think not. I don't think it's either cleaning or polishing.
What does it lead to? He achieves
fame.
Well, I
gets
think Little Joe in Bleak House.
I beg pardon?
Little Joe in Bleak House.
What did Little Joe do?
He swept the crossing.
That's right, he did.
And in terms of fiction, entered into immortality.
Sure, that's perfectly good, and that's a very good reply. Any other suggestions? Mr. Kieran.
There was that well-known shield polisher in Greek mythology.
Yeah, that's what I was
Mr. Kieran, which one does
Perseus,
Adam mean?
And when he slew the Gorgon.
Did he polish up his shield first?
Yes, he did. Yes.
Oh, yeah, in order to use it as a mirror.
Backed into the mirror.
That's right. And how about the old woman who brushed the cobwebs off the sky with her broom? How about the Pied Piper of Hamelin who cleansed the town of rats? Any of those would be good replies, but we have at least 4. Here's one from Louis F. Levy of Peekskill, New York. Get 3 out of 4. Here are some terms that sound very much alike, but they're not quite alike. Name the sport in which each of them is used. The first is spare, the second spar, the third spur, and the fourth spoor. Let's start with spare. Mr. Kieran.
Bowling.
Bowling. Used anywhere else? Any other sport? Is it used in hockey?
Well, that refers to an extra player, but...
Well, of course, that will be true of a great many sports. How about automobiling?
Yes.
There, tire. How about spar? Now, S-P-A-R. Mr. Wilcott.
Oh, boxing.
Boxing. Any other sport, Mr. Kieran?
Small boat sailing.
Yes. A nautical term in small boat sailing. How about spur? S-P-U-R. Mr. Adams.
Horse racing.
Horse racing. Any other sport?
Cockfighting.
Cockfighting, yes. It's a sport they have down in the South America. Pretty good, Mr. Wilcott. How about spoor? S-P-O-O-R. Mr. Perlman.
Big game hunting.
Big game hunting. What does spoor mean, Mr. Perlman?
Trail.
Yes, the track of an animal. You boys are too bright. No fun with you. The next one from Harold Goddard of Los Angeles. This is a Sherlock Holmes story.
That's Sherlock Holmes' problem. In the Sherlock Holmes stories, who or what were the following? First, the speckled band in the story called The Adventure of the Speckled Band. Mr. Perlman.
The speckled band was a snake which was wound around the forehead of Dr. Grimesby Roylott, I believe.
What a vivid memory. Very good, Mr. Perlman. That's quite right. It was a deadly snake, a swamp hunter. Now, how about the three-quarter in The Adventure of the Missing Three-Quarter?
What about him?
Well, who was he? Or what?
Well, he was a missing three-quarter just before a famous game of Rugger.
That's right. It's determined in Rugger.
But, and he was involved with a girl.
Gee, I wouldn't know.
Yes, and they'd sent for him.
And what was his name?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't see why you should know, Mr. Wilcox. But your answer is perfectly right. Jeffrey Staunton, a rugby player. Now, the six Napoleons in The Adventure of the Six Napoleons. Mr. Wilcox had his hand up. Mr. Perlman had his hand up. Mr. Perlman.
There were six statues of Napoleon, inside one of which, I believe, a black pearl was secreted.
That's right. That's very good, Mr. Perlman. That's quite right. That gives us 3 out of 3. Mr. Kieran, have you remembered any of these?
Not any.
Neither did I. Mr. Adams, you boys are just resting on your laurels. Well, now, let's see. I think that's about all we'll have time for. And now, with due apologies to Mr. Kieran, whose talents are so diverse, Mr. Cross wishes to point out that this is an age of specialists.
I do indeed, Mr. Patterson. For instance, you've heard me speak of the independent tobacco experts and of the fact that they smoke Lucky's 2-to-1. Now I'd like to tell you just who these experts are. They're a group of true specialists in tobacco. As buyers, auctioneers, and warehouse men, they buy, sell, and handle this huge American crop. With such a responsibility on their shoulders, they must and do know tobacco from A to Z. Now, at auction after auction, they see who pays the price to get the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. And sworn records show that twice as many of these independent experts smoke Lucky's exclusively as smoke all other cigarettes combined. So there you have the judgment of the real specialists in leaf tobacco. Why not profit by their expert knowledge? For a cigarette of finer, lighter, milder tobaccos, ask for Lucky Strike.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Tonight, Lucky Strike has sent out a total of $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica, which is very good going for us. Lucky Strike thanks you, Mr. Perlman and Mr. Wilcott, for coming tonight. Now, for the next week, Mr. Adams and Mr. Kieran will be on deck as usual. And as for our guests, one of them has been with us before, the charming English lady who wrote Mrs. Miniver, Miss Jan Struther. And the second might be called the unofficial ambassador from the London Times, the distinguished correspondent, Sir Wilmot Lewis. At the present time, it would be hard to find two guests who could better represent heroic England for us on our little program.
Better known as Aid to Britain.
Good enough. Remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. And now, a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Lucky's pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Lucky's 2-to-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.